The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
All right, so we're going straight into our interview with Mr. Idris Hossain. Good morning to you and welcome to Freedom.
Hi, good morning. Good morning. Glad to be back.
Great. So emotional intelligence, let's define that first before we step into a conversation about parenting, because we know that it is two separate things, but very much intertwined. So let's start with emotional intelligence. What is it?
Yeah, sure. So emotional intelligence is basically kind of having the emotional availability to be able to be in tune with your emotions, to be able to help yourself to regulate your own emotions, as well as regulate others' emotions. For example, your children when it comes to parenting. Yeah?
Now, when you say regulate other people's emotions, isn't that something that is... some would say not really your responsibility. How do we navigate through that?
Well, so when it comes to, so in context of parenting, I'm speaking about sometimes, and even with relationships as well, you know, you have to be able to, to be able to kind of control other people's emotions when it's out of control, if you know what I mean. And to do that, you have to employ certain skills or certain listening skills or certain, you know, maybe certain coping strategies that may work for them, you know. Mm-hmm. And these things help to regulate others' emotions when, because remember, emotions are something that we feel, right? We feel this all the time. And emotions lead to behavior, right? Mm-hmm. But not all emotions need to lead to a behavior that's negative. So in order to be able to regulate those emotions, sometimes you need an outside person to be able to explain that to you. Hey, I'm seeing that you are exhibiting right now some rage, for example. So, you know, before you go on your clip people wing mirror or whatever on the street on while you're driving, let's regulate that emotion. Let's talk about that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you're able to, the behavior that's exhibited is you meditate or you calm yourself down, and that kind of regulates it. And so helping regulate someone's emotion is basically about you able to help them to recognize the emotion that's being exhibited at that moment. When, you know, as we all know, emotions are like a big hurricane, you know, inside of our brain, you know, when mm-hmm. it's happening to us.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we talk about parenting, obviously there are different ages that parents, some don't stop parenting at all. But let's start with, you know, from baby to toddler. So if we're looking at the parenting cycle from baby to 18 years old.
Okay.
So can we define it as that? Or would we look at it as parenting overall? Because I'm sure your mommy is still parent you from time to time and tell you, well, you know, give you advice. You see, we're trying to find a definition. And I'm thinking the topic would apply more to, as we find that there are a lot of issues with our young people in terms of that same rage that you spoke about. And now with the increase in suicides amongst young people, how do we navigate being emotionally intelligent enough to have a conversation, prevent things like that?
Yeah. So first of all, yes, you are right. Emotional intelligence starts from the beginning, from birth as you go up, by recognizing a baby's and a toddler's needs, you know, by being able to identify it and being able to say, you know, this is the baby is craving this attention. You know, of course, they have, there are multiple different things where, you know, you can't leave the baby for too long. They'll have separation anxiety. You know, you can't kind of smother the baby a lot. You know, in other words, give them chance to be able to get their feelings out and deal with their feelings. And then it goes all the way up, of course, until they become a child and then an adolescent and, you know, teenager and all of these things. And it's very similar in terms of the same type of emotional intelligence or emotional parenting as we're talking about today, that you administer, let's use it like that. You administer that without, parents administer that constantly. So when it comes to a child or it comes to a teenager, especially with a teenager, it gets more complicated, of course, and we have to use more kind of grounded theory in a way to be able to figure out what this child needs, mm-hmm. right? And the thing is, emotional intelligence, right, is not about being soft, right? So when you're talking about, let's talk about a child from 6 years old. Let's use two categories here: 6 years old to 12 years old, and then 13 years to 17. Let's look at it in those two categories, right? It's not about being soft with the child when you're raising them, right? It's about being able to, again, regulate those emotions throughout whenever they're feeling an emotion, right? So that they can make a responsible choice, right? And also that they're able to communicate their feelings effectively, throughout life and even after they become an adult.
Now, in that process as well, I noted that there may be a very thin line between allowing a child, as you say, to express themselves and express that emotion and to know how to either, to control it, taper it, to understand what it is, and then the emotional manipulation of the adult on the child. How do we tell the difference? Maybe can you go in that direction? Like, how can we differentiate the two, where we are allowing the child to express that pure emotion from them, but it's not an emotion that has been manipulated by the parent.
The parent.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. I understand that. So again, there's a fine line between getting the child to do something that they want to do by figuring out and being aware or emotionally intelligent enough as a parent to know what they want versus what you want for them. And that's a big thing in Caribbean culture. Parents usually say that I know what is best for you and I can tell you. And a lot of that comes from not emotional intelligence, I agree, right? It is a form of manipulation without their knowing it. So it comes from their own, it's a multitude of things, but usually it comes from things like, for example, their own dreams that they give up on and that they want to project onto the child. And then it comes from the way that they were brought up, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, the generational, we call it generational expectations, right? So those things would be things like, they were raised a certain way with strict rules, corporal punishment, these things, and they expect that the child needs to be grown up with that same kind of mentality. So it's about being aware and being in tune with what that child needs as well. Each child is different. One child may need constant talking to, in terms of, let's talk about how you feel, let's talk about what's going on. Another child might need just once in a while, well, I know you know way about, but it seems right now you seem overwhelmed with this situation. Let me talk about this with you. And this is, having two children and understanding the two children and understanding their needs, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the big things is about encouraging, right, the emotional resilience of that child. So by understanding what your child needs, but without putting your own projections onto them, right, emotional resilience is something that you have to do. You have to teach them as well. So you have to have that fine line in between. You're correct when you say manipulation does occur. We don't want that, right? Mm-hmm. In Caribbean society, right, we value a lot of strength and perseverance, right? And we think that comes from resilience. But the thing is, we can't just tough it out, If a child's struggling in school, right, instead of saying, you had to work harder, you just had to work harder, or pray to God and that is not too tough.
Stop making excuses,
That is not effective, in my opinion, because you would say things like, I would rather say something like, what part of this, let's break this down, what part of this you find difficult, what part of, dealing with a relationship that you are struggling with, what's going on, let me use my journey of life, right, let me reference that, which is the emotional intelligence, the emotions, the ability to draw from that emotion that you felt in the past, because of course, you know, we're not therapists, right? Parents are not therapists. Mm. But they're able to draw from reference. But being able to understand that child is not you is a big thing. That child is not the same, that child will not handle a situation in the same way that you handle that situation when you were 14 years old or whatever. That's a big thing to understand, and to be able to understand and abstractly construct what this child will need is like saying, I am going to study my child. But you see, putting in the work to study the child is the emotional intelligence, is the emotional work you're putting in, right? That's what I'm saying with the parenting, you know? You need to actually put in to work to understand that child.
And the way in which you do that, what would be some of the tips you would give to a parent listening to this now and saying, all right, I'm going to set aside that time that you speak of to know who my child is, what the interests are? What are some of the questions and what kind of atmosphere should be encouraged to bring about that conversation?
Yeah, sure. So one of the big things is kind of teaching them about expressing themselves emotionally, right? And that is difficult because we grew up in a culture of toughness here in the Caribbean, right? So instead of saying, you know, especially with boys, you know, boys have this thing with, you know, you know, the gender issue where, you know,
he's a, what he's you're a crying boy, for,
he's a girl. You're
supposed to be a tough boy.
That's labeling, right, first of all, right? Because, yes, a man has certain expectations in the future, but at this moment, you're a child, right? Mm-hmm. You're a child, you're not a man at the moment, you're not a woman at the moment, you're a child. And your job as a parent is to kind of help that child to be able to become an adult. And through expressing themselves, right, it encourages the child, right, to name and express their emotions safely. And so naming the emotions is something we use in therapy a lot, right? So could we name this emotion? Because a lot of times we have nameless emotions because it's all fluttering around in our head. And that's something that we don't want. We want to be able to name our emotion. Right? You're annoyed? No. Not annoyed. What is the feeling that you're feeling? Let's say anger. Is it anger? Is it rage and anger? Is it sadness? You know? Let's talk about that now. Where is that coming from? And as a parent, you could do that. Eh? That sounds like a therapy session. But you, as a parent, you're supposed to be doing this when it comes to understanding. Because I understand completely. I've seen recently these school children. I work with them, the parents who are grieving recently with that school child, those two school children that you were talking about. And yeah. It is a difficult thing. It's difficult. They blame themselves and all of this. But I can't say and what exactly occurred there. But I could say that having that emotional intelligence to be able to say that you've done this will definitely benefit a child. And it's something that I've seen occurred when I was in England. I have seen the parents, they have a different approach. Now, again, it's not being soft as well, right? It's not being permissive. It's an approach where you are able to help them to freely understand their emotions and freely express their emotions, but not to the extent of, I've never lived in the US, but you see it a lot in the US where children take the liberties and they feel like they can overstep. And I think that's the line where you have to not allow them to cross that line, right? So expressing their emotions is important, right? You know, don't say things like boys don't cry or whatever, or suck it up or whatever. Let them express it. Ask them, do you want to talk about it and label and let's list what emotion you're feeling. That's important as well, right? And also having respect as well. You see, one of the things is, and this is something when I was at child guidance clinic, I understand that parents usually feel like children somebody that this is my child, this is a product of me, this came from me, whatever, and this is my property, and I am supposed to do exactly. So when they come to therapy, right, usually the things that they would say, 99% actually, so I would say almost all the children, right, the parents have no clue what's actually going on with them. Now, of course, you can't speak to your child about everything. You can't speak to your parent, your mom or dad about anything. But the extent to which they felt like they couldn't open up and express themselves by the time they arrived at you know, the child guidance clinic, for example, was baffling to me how the parents don't know these things going on, mm-hmm. you know? So having respect, because you see, you respect a child, you treat them with respect. Now, of course, we have this way that we are you see it a lot, like Certified Samson, my partner, he's always put up the aggressive parenting style, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you know, on his videos, on his comedic videos, and you would see the aggressive parenting style there. Yes, okay, but with the aggressive parenting style, you know, you see that there's a way as well that you can be authoritative. So we have a lot of authoritarian parenting style. So authoritarian is where, you know, do what I say or else. Mm-hmm. Authoritative would be more do what I say because these are the reasons and I believe that this is why you need to do it. Mm-hmm. Of course, conveying that information, you know, is important as well, because you don't want to, you don't have to say it like if you're allowing the child too much liberties, but there are ways you know your child and you're able to say those things. You know, so having respect, I would say it's like a two-way street, right? So that's important as well. So when you're parenting, you emphasize the respect for elders, right? But you also let the child feel respected as well, so that they feel like they could come to you. And this is so crucial. You wouldn't believe this. From my own experience, you know, working with children in therapy, you really need to make that child feel like they have a certain level of respect to come to you. Because a lot of parents have this false, you know, ideology that if I keep my child close by and I let that child, you know, I tell that child what to do and I keep them, I keep wraps on them and I keep them inside.
Sheltered is the word you're looking for. Sheltered.
Sheltered, yeah. If I keep them like that, then nothing can happen. But there's two ends to that spectrum. And the other end of that spectrum is that you feel like you're not able to go out to any birthday parties, you're not able to do this because you're a girl, whatever, and you know, you tend to feel this, you know, this fear of missing out, right? There's a psychological term for it as well, when you get anxiety as well from being by yourself because you're never allowed to go out when you're a child, mm-hmm. you know? And I know people close to me as well who've never been able to go out, and now they need to go out, they need to be out, they can't be inside anymore. But what I'm saying is, when you keep that child under wraps and close by, they feel like they can't open up. And it's the same effect that you're trying to keep them away from that ends up happening, where they end up rebelling anyway, mm-hmm. because they're not able to go out and do what they want to do in terms of... And what they want to do, for example, might just be to go out and have fun and relax. Yes, they'll make their mistakes. Yes, they'll do their things. Yes, they'll have certain things they can't tell you, right? There'll be certain things that... You know, they may tell you, but you mm-hmm. see, the thing is, when they come to you and they say, listen, dad, mom, I vape today, for example, that's not something to scold. Yes, you need to explain to them, as we spoke about earlier, you need to explain to them, let's talk about the risks of vaping, let's talk about what you, and some of them now, they vape in this weed vape and all these things, whatever. That's extremely harmful, to especially to children. So, of course, you want to come in and say, what? What you do ever, but when you do that, you will do something called invalidating, right? Their emotions, invalidating the fact that they come to you and they've opened up and confided in you that I did this, I am scared, I didn't know, this is the first time that happened, I don't know what I should do. Let me talk to my parents about this. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to do that the second time. They're not going to do it at all because they feel now, first of all, they haven't gotten the advice they wanted, which is, you know, this is the reasons why I shouldn't do that again, which is something you should have explained to them in a way that they're receptive. And secondly, sometimes when you speak to a child in a certain way, they blank out, you know. It happens a lot, you know. Mm-hmm.
And especially if you're not using their up-to-date language. Oh, my word. It's a whole a whole new dictionary that we have to get these days, you know.
Yes, it is.
To have that kind of conversation.
You're very right. I had to learn that lingo in order to be able to relate to children, because I deal with children a lot, right? Mm-hmm. I work with children a lot, and I had to learn that lingo in order to be able to, you know, to kind of relate, because relatability is a big thing. You're right. Mm-hmm. You know, so like when they said, "Let me tell you the tea," you know, tea means gossip. I didn't know that.
Girl, I've got some high hot piping tea.
Yeah.
Let me bring my cup and sit down. Now, just for those who are willing to improve on their emotional intelligence, I see that we have 5 keys to emotional intelligence. Can you tell us about those keys?
Oh, okay, no problem. The 5 keys to emotional intelligence.
So, mm-hmm. Self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation. Can you tell us about those things, those 5 steps that would encourage?
So one of them is self-awareness, right? So self-awareness is kind of recognizing and understanding your own emotions, right? And what strengths and weaknesses that you have. So in parenting, right, being self-aware is understanding that you as a person have strengths, certain things that you went through, certain things that you're able to relate to, certain things that you're able to draw reference to. And then the weaknesses are certain things that you grew up with. So again, traditional, generational, norms, generational expectations, mm-hmm. right? Where, you know, my mom and dad taught me this. My mom and dad said I need to be a certain way. And, that's not something that applies to 2025, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a weakness in itself, right? Being able to self-regulate is another one, right? So when you manage your expectations, right, you tend to be able to control your impulses. And this is something as a parent as well. If you're angry and fuming and you're frustrated about something, it's not something that you're going to be able to help anybody if you can't help yourself, right? So being able to self-regulate and teaching self-regulation as well is important to the child as well. Mm-hmm. So when you teach in self-regulation, you need to teach the child that, okay, you feel anger, you feel rage. And most of the times with people, we manifest our emotions in 2 ways most of the time. So it's either sadness or anger. So anger is on the extreme side is rage. And then sadness, of course, is depression. Right, so being able to regulate it will help their quality of life, and you need to help them to be able to self-regulate. And if I get back to the weaknesses as well, if you're not able to self-regulate, being able to teach them about self-regulation is going to be out of, let's say, love, for example. You're going to do that out of love because you can't do it. So do as I say, not as I do. Right,
mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to help that child self-regulate. From your own experience, but you can help them by intellectualizing it, we call it. So intellectualizing in the process of self-regulation. I see that you tend to tense up and you tend to get rage and shake and you know, you tend to do you tend to say all these hurtful things or whatever, and you go full 100 kind of when you get angry. That is from a place of rage. Let's regulate your emotions, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to motivate a child is another one, right? So you're having the resilience inside, right, to be able to motivate them. So the main thing I say to a lot, what we realize in with adults and children, but the children especially, because at that age, it's important, you need to have a sense of purpose. So having a sense of purpose, it gets you to a point where it's not just you're doing certain things and you're not sure why, you know? So like you ask a child, what do you feel, what do you want to do when you get older? What do you want to do? What profession do you want to get into? You know, I don't want to say, what do you want to do when you grow up? You know, I don't want to say that, you know, but what do you want to do? And then when you're able to have a sense of purpose, it gives you a deeper motivation, being able to motivate them to help them, right? So that they're able to feel like, okay, I'm working towards this. But again, a parent needs to understand, I want to hear what you want. I want to hear what's your goals. Tell me and I'll help you work with your goals. Yeah.
So that the child feels included and obviously becomes a safe space to have that constant conversation. Because as a child growing up, one minute you want to be a ballerina, next minute you want to be a vet, next minute you want to be something, because it's always ever changing. But that guidance, yeah, and that safety to feel, well, I can discuss this with the people who would be, one, the financial providers of that dream, mm-hmm. for up to a particular point, would have an understanding of where you see yourself moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, too, when you're looking at a child and their goals and aspirations, you can assess them as well, which is what we therapists do as well. But like in terms of a parent, you are seeing them 24/7. Mm-hmm. You would know their strengths and weaknesses. You would know what would work very well for them. You would kind of say, that child could rail talk. She should be a lawyer, you know? She could rail. You know, you have these, you know, you have a daughter and she's very sassy and she's very opinionated, you know? And she says she wants to do a certain profession. You can put your opinion in. Yes, you a lawyer would be a good field for you. But you allow them to go through the process of changing that, as you correctly said. You know, okay, I want to be, for example, I have a colleague that I work with. She used to be a dentist, right? And her parents, her mom and dad were very, very supportive. And I admire their parenting style so much.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a certified dentist for some years, and she came and told her mom, so this would have been at 23, 24 years old or whatever, she's an only child, she said, Mom, I would like to be a dancer, you know? I would like to dance professionally. I would like to dance. And she said to herself, I think they spoke, and she said, well, why don't you integrate what you love, which is therapy, into dancing or whatever, and see how that can make some money, rather than saying, you know, Gil, you're a dentist, you're a doctor, basically. Right? No, let's ignore that completely. Let's throw that out the window. And sure enough, this is a true story, right? I work with her right now. She's a creative arts therapist right now. So she gets paid for doing therapy in the within the space of creative arts with the specialty of dance now. And that is something that a parent, and I really hear the stories about her parents, her mom being such an inspiration to her. You know, that is something that she, you know, her parents needed to kind of get that input in because that was her best friend, you know?
And that direction eventually led to something that she loves doing and will continue doing for quite a while because it's her safe space.
Yeah, exactly. It is a safe space. And on safe spaces, it expands there. So you have a safe space at home, but when you have a friend that you meet and that friend is you know, someone that you can really open up and talk to or whatever, and you really realize that this person is always there for you through everything. You know, you come with all your baggage, everything, but then you open up to that person. See, space expands the friendship zone as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you tend to meet really long-lasting friendships as well. When you're around 16, 17, 18 years old, if you do meet them, you know, you tend to meet them around that age. And you're still a child at 17, so you can meet a friend for life at 17 years old, you know?
Yeah. All right. Right, Mr. Hossein, I've got to stop here because we've got news in the next 7 minutes. But I want to show the appreciation for you to come in and talk to us about emotional intelligence in parenting. And I'm hoping that it reached a few doors today because, you know, with our young people being the future, we will need to keep an eye on them and actually learn how to do that. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no problem at all. All right.
So we'll see you again next week.
Yep. Maybe. We'll
see. Thanks so much. Take care. Bye bye.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.